Hi everyone, and welcome to Intentional Inclusivity, the Women in Mining South Africa's podcast that will focus on diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging. I am Maria Combrink, the Deputy Chairperson for WIMSA, and I will be your host today. Just a fair warning, the language that I will be using today will reflect my own stance as a person with disabilities. It might not be the language that everyone chooses to use, so please, if it's not the language that you prefer, just be aware that it is my choice of language, and my guests will also be referring in the language that is comfortable for them to use. So with me, I have two phenomenal women in the studio, Natalie Brand and Kat Swanepoel, and I will now let them introduce themselves. Natalie.
Hi, everyone. My name is Natalie Brand. I am a geologist by training, which is where I met Maria, basically. I am part of the Women in Mining Society, call it a society. I'm currently the general manager at Earth Lab Technical Division. But yes, geology is my background and my passion. That's me for now.
A bit of a rock star.
Sometimes. Thanks. I haven't licked a rock in a while, so yeah.
Which might not be a bad thing. Go for it, Kat.
Hi, I'm Kat, and the only thing I know about mining is that I tend to dig myself into large holes that are difficult to get out of sometime. I'm actually an occupational therapist by trade, but also very involved in the disability sporting community, and that's where I got involved with Maria.
Yes, Kat is being very humble. Kat has represented South Africa in numerous sporting codes as a para-athlete with wheelchair basketball, and currently Kat is one of our Paralympic swimmers, and I'm getting the evil eye because true to herself, she's also quite humble about all of her accolades. So thank you both for joining me today. We're going to discuss a topic that might not be easy to cover or rehash because it's regarding degenerative diseases that lead to disabilities. A lot of times when people do become disabled, it might be a sudden event, like a mining accident or a car accident with a spinal cord injury or maybe an amputation resulting from that. And people know you basically the before and the after. Whereas when we look at degenerative diseases, it happens slowly over time and it's not always the same for everyone. So if it's fine by you two, I'm going to out both of you now because both of you have been diagnosed with multiple sclerosis or MS. And today I would really like to discuss how you are experiencing life living with MS. So Natalie, how was it diagnosed by you?
My story is a bit of a longer story. I was a very clumsy child. And so I was always in the wars and, you know, I ended up over the years, my teenage years, I had a few head injuries. And so at the time I was seeing a neurosurgeon. So it was 2016. Well, my first, I want to say, symptoms was back in my honors year, 2013, where the right side of my face and my right arm went completely numb. So because of I had had multiple whiplash events and things like that, so at the time it was just put down to, you know, a pinched nerve. The way that MS symptoms work, or at least for me, is in the relapse remitting phase, the symptoms can go away on their own. So at that point I was busy writing my honors exams, trying to with my numb arm. Got through that, eventually it got better. So that then there was no event up until 2016. I lost vision completely in my right eye. Just suddenly, I was at work. Just drove myself to the optometrist, and she said, "There's nothing wrong with your eye." So I said, "Well, I can't really see anything." So she said, "Okay." I had told her I had been seeing a neurosurgeon along the years. So she said, "Go back to him." Unfortunately, this is where the medical system lets you down. And the specialists aren't necessarily well-phrased in neurology. If you're a neurosurgeon, it's a challenge. So he essentially said, no, you've just got increased spinal fluid pressure. So they drained that out through a spinal tap, and then a few weeks later it was right back up again, so he went in with another spinal tap, but then he ended up actually putting in a shunt. So I have a lower perineal shunt at the moment also, which I now can't take out because it's more dangerous to take out than it is to leave, but I don't really need it. It was only after that when my eyesight went completely again, then this neurosurgeon decided to refer me to a neurologist. And yeah, so that was my first actual event. So the way that MS medication works, they don't actually put you on anything until you relapse again, because it can be an isolated event. So you do get instances where you just, it's just a random thing that happens, and it's
like a bit of a glitch, and then everything goes back and it's not MS.
So they don't medicate you until you actually relapse again. So okay. That's what happened. 2017, my eye went again. And the same neurologist said, you know, this is your second relapse, but we're not going to medicate you yet because maybe it's still not MS. So I then got frustrated, because that's one of the most frustrating parts of it, is you feel like you're going crazy. And without a diagnosis, it's such a challenge. So then I decided to switch, and I did my own research. I found the neurologist that has written the papers on diagnosis in South Africa. Went to him. He looked at my MRI. He said, if I was teaching about MS, I would show them your MRIs. So then it was a big, for me at least, it was a relief, because you got your diagnosis. You're like, okay, now we can treat it. Now we can move forward. Now we can, you know.
Yes, starting point.
Yes, exactly. So it was just my unfortunate luck that I was in and out of accidents and things all through my childhood. So, but yes, a little bit longer. So essentially, 2017, I was officially diagnosed. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, from that first instance, I've got a bit of permanent damage on my optic nerve, but that's the only permanent thing for me at the moment.
Okay. And Kat, before I ask you about your diagnosis, I can listen to you speaking about MS for hours, because we do have a lot of conversations regarding it, because I find it, as much as it is devastating, I also find it quite an interesting disease. So before we get on to your diagnosis, can you just give us a quick overview of the different types of MS that one gets?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I think that one of the things is what makes MS such a complex disease. I mean, I think it's got a specific name, which is a snowflake disease, in just that everyone's so different. And I think, you know, hearing your frustration of getting a diagnosis is because it looks so different in different people. And, you know, this is the difficulty with the diagnosis and also with the treatment is there are four main types of MS, although even within those four, they're now finding different ones, where I think your most common one is what's known as relapsing remitting MS. It's, I think, you know, when most people refer to MS, as that's what they think of, is you'll have a relapse where you will have a worsening of symptoms or new symptoms appear, and then you'll go through a period of remittance where those symptoms will vastly reduce or disappear completely, and, you know, sort of function will be at almost normal level. That tends to progress. I think the mean time is normally over about 10 years, where you can then get a thing called secondary progressive MS, where you still have this relapsing remitting pattern going on, but that you never get back to baseline completely. Okay. So you start building up disability, but you still have a sort of a relapse in remitting. Then you get the third form, which is primary progressive MS, where basically it is from your first symptom. You will go through periods of plateau, but you never go back to baseline.
Okay.
So once you've kind of got symptoms, it tends to stay around, and from the get-go, you sort of collect disability like Pokemon almost. You know, got to catch them all. And then the fourth one, and I may be wrong here, is sort of like a clinically isolated, where what you were saying is you can get a thing and they will only officially diagnose MS once you have two incidents separated by, I think, six months of symptoms, and very often different symptoms, because it can be just a case where there's a glitch in the system, and that's why they don't immediately go in and treat. And then also, and where I've, you know, fallen into, so I mean, my diagnosis is actually that of primary progressive MS. Where I've also fallen into is what they call atypical MS, where it is, it just, you know, I think with any of these things, there's guidelines, but none of our bodies read the textbook. Mm. And so, and I think, again, that's what makes it so difficult to get proper care and attention, is because it appears so differently in so many people. And so very often when people ask me my disability, I often don't tell them I have MS, because they immediately revert back to the relapsing remitting form, and they say, well, why are you in a wheelchair so early on? Like, my aunt's had it for 80 years and she's still walking absolutely fine. Like, you lame loser, get out of your wheelchair. It is. It's a very complex disability. And I think it's also what makes it difficult for people to understand and, you know, to manage.
Yeah, definitely. If you can then just tell us how your diagnosis went.
So I was actually laughing, not laughing because it's not funny, but I was just thinking, you know, where you see so many similarities and so many differences, is saying, you know, you're a clumsy child. Is I was a very active child, but I wasn't clumsy. I was extremely coordinated. I've always played sport. Mm. Like, my coordination has always been on point. But from the age of about 15, 16, I started picking up more and more injuries. For instance, I broke my ankle and tore all my ligaments 3 years in a row. And I went through all of the rehab, the proprioceptive rehab. I was a provincial level squash player at that time. And, you know, we couldn't understand, like, why am I still doing this? And, you know, people say, oh, you know, you're clumsy or you play too hard. But it was like I was actually highly coordinated. Now when we look back at it, it was probably the first symptoms of like a loss of proprioception in my ankle. So as I said, it was just interesting. So often I think, you know, people ask when you were diagnosed. Mm. But when you start looking back in your history, you start thinking, you know, you've got these random symptoms, which were never really fully explained. And I was diagnosed in my fourth year of study in OT. And my first symptoms, I started with weakness in my legs, a sensation loss. And what was a bit of a red herring, exactly what you were saying, is because of like your whiplash injuries you had seen the neurosurgeon, is I had a lot of biomechanical back problems. So I had degenerative disc disorder. Mm. I had an undiagnosed spina bifida. So, you know, the x-rays were like, no, this is it. Plus being OT, we lift in patients. It's a slip disc. It'll get better. Yeah. And, you know, just picking up symptoms. And also, as I say, I think what led me to pursue it further was I was on practical out in Hammanskraal. And we were teaching in a creche. And I looked at this one kid and I'm like, that's so strange. This child only has one eye. And I'm like, you know, just sort of like, and then I looked at another child and I'm like, that one also only has one eye. And it took me a while to like figure out, hang on a minute, all of these children only have one eye. So there's something going wrong with my vision. And one of my friends who was with me, you know, otherwise it's a one eyeless, you know, like it's only a one eye crash.
The cyclops really, crash.
You know, minion crash or something going on. And when one of my colleagues who was out with me obviously realized like I was getting a bit distressed about something, asked me what was going on. And in my head, I was telling her what's happening with my vision, but apparently I sounded more like a golden retriever than a human. And again, that was just put down to a bad migraine, and we moved on. And then it was eventually that led to me having an MRI done, where they picked up demyelination in my spinal cord. And even with that, because it was just in my spinal cord, it didn't pick up as usual MS. It just said it's a undiagnosed degenerative, like demyelinating disease. So it was also, it took me a good 2 years to then, when I started picking up more symptoms. So I was kind of partially diagnosed as, and I think again, when you spoke about that relief of having seen something wrong on a scan, you know, I think that's, especially with young women, so often neurologists, if they can't explain what is going on, they say, no, it's anxiety or this or this. You know, it's a typical, If we can't see what's happening, then it must be in your head.
Yes.
So almost that relief of, A, the terrifying seeing, you know, demyelination in your spinal cord, but actually almost the relief of, okay, there's something wrong.
There's
so,
really something wrong.
Yes. They couldn't explain it for about 2 years until, you know, I got other symptoms and other lesions. So that was sort of my journey that kind of led to a bit of a weird diagnosis of MS.
Okay. So it seems to me like it's more of a subtraction of options than really this is your diagnosis.
Definitely. I mean, I was also diagnosed first with fibromyalgia just because, everything was wrong.
And, yes.
You know, they couldn't pinpoint it. So it was just, okay, pain. Fibromyalgia.
Young woman, pain, have no idea, it's fibro.
Yeah, exactly.
It's actually quite sad that that we're still in this day and age still have that kind of treatment when it comes to women and healthcare.
Mm.
So, Natalie, you have relapse remitting.
Yes.
How does this influence your daily life, especially when it comes to interacting with people that you see every day that might not be aware of your diagnosis?
I mean, yeah, it's a difficult one. For me, at the moment, especially, you know, you wouldn't look at me and say there's something wrong with you. I mean, sometimes, but...
I was just about to say...
Be nice, Maria. but it's just, you end up needing to, especially people you don't know and they don't know you're diagnosed. I often find myself, you know, you're putting... on a front, maybe I'm fatigue affects me a lot as part of MS. I mean, people say they understand fatigue, but you don't really understand fatigue until you've got it. But that's the feeling that you have during the day. And often, especially talking to new people, I was telling you earlier, I end up slurring my words just because, especially when I'm trying to talk very fast. So I often just sound drunk, and I said to you earlier, you know, sometimes a bit of wine actually helps that.
Luckily, you're a geologist. We're all familiar with how much they drink. So.
Yes. So I mean, in normal day-to-day life, if you don't know that I have MS, it's not, you know, the first thing I tell people. Mm. So... daily living, not really affecting me, but I mean, I'm on a number of different medications now also, just so the permanent damage for me is my optic nerve, but I suffer from quite bad muscle spasms and things like that, which I'm medicated for on a daily basis also, but that's obviously helping get through the day. So, yeah.
But also, so today... it's Tuesday, you're at work, you seem fine. Tomorrow you phone in and say, well, really can't do it. Can't do it. How does that factor in on how you think people perceive your work ethic or, you know, your commitment?
It's a good question. It's a struggle, definitely. I am a bit of a workaholic, so it's... I try to, you know, push through a lot of things I probably shouldn't, put it that way. So I think at work with my colleagues and everything, I'm also very open, especially in work situations, because obviously you don't have to disclose these things to an employer, but I prefer to do that just for, you know, and that's been a negative thing in some instances, but I've never had proper issues with, you know, if I have a relapse, it's just, listen, I phoned the boss, you know, listen, I'm going into hospital today. That's about it. A lot of people still don't really understand what the, you know, my colleagues and everything like that, they know MS, you hear MS. Again, they say, oh no, my great aunt has MS. I know someone with MS. It's almost like telling someone you're a geologist. Oh, cool. I know a geologist. Yes. But if you say MS, they're like, okay, MS, but they don't understand what it really means unless, you know, unless they do know someone about it, then they catastrophize or they don't know anything about it and kind of just ignore it until it's a problem.
Okay.
So,
And Kat, on your side, do you find that it affects your day-to-day in terms of work?
I think in one way, I have it a bit easier. I mean, I progress very quickly.
Always the overachiever.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, yeah, you know, if you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do
just
it
do
proper.
It. Yes.
I'm going to, you know, my neurologist told me I'd be paralyzed within 5 years. Well, I did it in two, you know, like I'm going to
give
break
me that,
that
barrier.
That
whole benchmark. That
exactly.
Whole benchmark.
So I think because, you know, so I went from diagnosis to being a full-time wheelchair user in 2 years. Mm. And in some way that's made it a lot easier because my disability is so visible.
Yes.
A lot of people, you know, obviously won't know what my disability is, but it's not something that is invisible. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, I think I almost struggle more with the invisible symptoms that I have, which people don't know about. Like you said, you know, word slurring, mm-hmm. or the fatigue or pain where, mm-hmm. you know, my mobility, at least I can very easily, people see wheelchair, they assume you're disabled. Well, not assume, they know you're disabled, you know, so I think that's actually in a way helped a lot, you know, just being visibly disabled. I'm really fortunate working in healthcare, I've been at my company now, 12 years.
Shout out to your company.
C-Mobility. So it is a wheelchair and seating, so I work as a wheelchair and seating specialist. You know, and it's been really great. And I think especially having a 12-year relationship with them. Mm. And as you said, I never had the issue of not being able to disclose because you can hardly roll into an interview in a wheelchair and be like, yeah. Hey, I'm not disabled. You know, just lazy.
Just lazy, like, walking today.
I know, I'm wearing my white sneakers and I really don't want to get them dirty. You know, it's sort of, I didn't have that thing. But I mean, even, you know, you do... when choosing to disclose, you also do have a lot of discrimination that you have to get through. And what shocked me the most was the discrimination that I got from the healthcare sector, who should know better.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, just lucky, you know, with my company, it was a case of this is full disclosure that they known from the get-go. Mm. And I think with me, it can be a case of I can wake up tomorrow and not be able to see, or I can wake up and it's even when I look back physically what I could do when I started at the company to what I can do now is very different. And I'm really grateful to have like a company where there's been no questions asked. I think we all tend to be workaholics, you know, and it is a thing of, okay, well, we just need to adapt and overcome. Mm. So I think for me, where it affects me like on a daily basis more is the sheer unpredictability of it. And as I say, just adapting as I, you know, pick up greater disability of adapting my work function and all of that. Mm.
I would like to take this moment also as a person with a visible physical disability. If you're listening and you have a disability, be it visible or not visible, I know it's a big step, but please do disclose, because that's the only way that one will get past the stigma eventually. Mm. If we all just disclose and say, you know, it's not a blanket thing. Accommodation is very personalized and individualized, and it does not need to cost an arm and a leg. And you can do with smaller, more accommodating things at work that will be well suited just for you. And please do disclose. It's also in terms, especially in mining, your health and safety, you need a PEEP, which is your personalized emergency escape plan, which might be necessary. So if your employer does not know that you need reasonable accommodation, you're never going to get it. So please disclose.
Yeah. Yes. No, I agree with you 100%.
Yes. Then, Natalie, what are the top three things that you would like other people to know about your diagnosis and your own personal journey with MS?
All right. So first of all, again, I want to kind of remove the stigma. The medical field has, you know, improved with MS over the past however many years significantly. So it's not a case of, as Kat said, you know, relapsing remitting usually turns into secondary progressive. But as far as I know, that's decreasing at the moment. So you don't automatically assume.
Is this due to the advances in medication for early diagnosis?
Yes. So it used to be the case where, you know, MS, then it's okay, so you're going to be wheelchair bound sometime, which is, it's decreasing at the moment, which is great. For me, you don't know, nobody knows, but now I know where to get some wheels if if I need some. But just that, it's, people are kind of just like, as I said, they either go really dark or they're like, okay, cool, you have MS. So it's awareness, a lot of awareness. I really like what Rare Diseases South Africa is doing. I'm involved there a little bit. But yeah, that's the first thing I want people to just, you know, it's not a death sentence. Yeah. It also used to be more common that you would die not directly from MS, but obviously symptoms. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's not a death sentence. Also like people to know that I can still, you know, do the things that I want to do. They may be a little bit slower now, but I don't ever want to be excluded. Yeah. Just mm-hmm. because you know I have MS now. Don't exclude me from things, because at the moment, while I still can, I would like to do the things I still can.
So it's not slower, it's just with more intent.
Yes.
Yes.
So I used to run, well, I do still run, but I used to run a lot more. A little bit faster.
I just run from my problems. I don't run.
Exactly. So it's a little bit harder now, but, you know, I'm doing what I can at the moment. So just, yeah. And also the third thing, in the same stance, don't get offended if I turn something down. Please, it's not a personal thing. I'm very lucky. It hasn't happened a lot to me, but you know, there are days with relapsing, remitting, it's not permanent disability. But the way it kind of works is also with an actual relapse, they say, okay, you need to have a new symptom for more than 48 hours before it's treated. So there've been days where, I mean, I've woken up in the morning and I can't use my legs. And then I kind of like, okay, sit there for a while, roll over, go back to sleep, then wake up and my legs are okay.
Yeah.
So it's a, yeah, it's just a, something that people, you know, you won't understand, but you're never going to hold that against them, you know.
Yeah.
Understanding is awareness. That's for us to help. So yeah. Anyone, I really appreciate anyone who has questions about it. I'm happy to talk about it. So yeah. I don't want it to be like a taboo thing. Yeah. You have MS, okay, we don't want to talk about that now.
Yeah, so bring it out and speak about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's the awareness, one of the biggest things, definitely. Yeah. And I think now, also, especially in South Africa, because, I mean, MS was also mostly seen as a European disease.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're diagnosing it earlier here, especially with our own medicine in South Africa and in Africa in general. So where people used to just struggle for many years without actual diagnosis, it's getting a lot better. And yes, the early diagnosis is key, because the sooner you can get on a treatment, the better.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Kat, are there any genetic factors, or have they found what is the major cause, or is it still hocus pocus?
I think it's still greatly hocus pocus. I mean, I think, you know, they have found certain trends. I wouldn't say, you know, it's really statistically proven. Mm. Certain trends, there can be certain genetics. There's certain things linked in with, like, vitamin D. And I think especially that's when we're much more highly diagnosed in the European population. Yeah. I mean, I know there's places in Scotland where there's much higher incidences of MS. So it is really, I'm the only one in my family with MS, with any sort of neurological disorder or disability. I'm also the only one who plays sport in my family. So I'm still convinced I'm adopted, and I'm the only ginger. So this is all starting to stack up.
The trifecta.
It's a trifecta. Yes. It's really starting to stack up.
Yeah.
So it is. I think it's one of those things where a bit of a luck of the draw situation. As I say, they are finding. Yes. Yeah. Sucks to be you. You know, where There's certain theories being posted, but as far as I know in the research, there's been nothing statistically evident that has been said, you know, this is a genetic risk, or if you have X, Y, and Z, then this will lead to MS.
Okay. Yeah, there is a commonality, I believe, in autoimmune disorders in general. So my mom was diagnosed with Hashimoto's only after I was diagnosed with MS, because that's also a nice, difficult one to diagnose. Yeah. Autoimmunes in general. Which one would you like today? I mean, you can also have more than one autoimmune disease. So, yeah, that's what I've heard. And more recently, the link to, I've forgotten the name of the virus.
Epstein-Barr.
Yeah, there we go. Epstein-Barr virus. So glandular fever, which I did have as a teenager as well. So you did as well, Katja. So that's they're kind of linking that.
I also had it, but I only lost a foot.
But different, you know. Keep the one you still have. Yes, so it's all good. Yeah, so it's always questionable, but still no direct.
I think it's also...
I have no one in my family that has MS either. Yeah.
But I also think it's that by nature, humans want to know why.
Yeah,
why? Definitely. So maybe there's something that we've all been missing, and somebody might come along and find that missing piece. So, Kat, your top three things that you would like people to know.
Sure. Yeah, I think a lot of mine are actually very similar to what Natalie said. I think for me, my biggest thing is, you know, a lot of people ask me to speak to people who are newly diagnosed with MS. And I'm often very hesitant to do that, not because I don't want to offer support, but because I do have a very extreme form of MS. And I think it is, as I said, people either will be like, oh, that's not so bad. You know, you get tired every now and again and you slur, or, oh my gosh, you're going to get in a wheelchair and you're going to die. You know, so for me, being so visibly disabled, I, you know, don't want that to be what people think. I am on the minority of it. So I am often hesitant to speak to people who are newly diagnosed, or, as I say, to even share that I have a diagnosis of MS, not because I'm ashamed of it or anything, but it's just because I know it's not how I present, it's not common. But I think to share, it's not a death sentence, and to not let it stop what you're wanting to do. I mean, there used to be, and I'm so pleased to hear you saying, you know, you're still running. There used to be this absolute myth. Hey, you're doing better than I am, so, you know, that's good. You know, there used to be this myth of if you have MS, you're not allowed to exercise, you know, because it is a link, increased heat, it does cause increased muscle weakness. So you do need to be careful, increased exertion. But that just led to a blanket thing of you have MS, stop exercising, and pretty much go sit in a hole and wait to, you know.
For your slow demise.
Your slow demise and be all miserable and all of that. And I just want to say to people, it's like, just don't stop what you're doing. Live life. Like, you might do it differently. You might, you know, have to put certain precautions in place. But I'm actually a firm believer of my involvement in sport has actually improved my life, my quality of life, than it has done anything to take away from it. I think second thing is also for people supporting someone with MS is having that understanding, like as you said, sometimes I might drop you at the last minute. You know, it's like what I've always appreciated being friends with you, Maria, is you're like one of those people who can be like, yeah, I know we've had this briar planned for forever, but I've woken up and I just can't. And I know that you won't see it as me now trying to get out of it. And that it also won't stop you from inviting me to the next thing. Because just now, because I had to bail on you this time, doesn't mean that I don't want to be involved. I don't want to be included. And I think the third thing is similar to Natalie, to what you're saying, is don't be scared to ask questions. You know, it's I know, Maria, you've always said it about like your leg, and we've had like often things about, you know, when kids come up to us and having, you know, visible physical disabilities. We love kids coming up to us asking questions.
Yeah.
Because it helps to dispel that fear that, you know, you're like some weird alien. although the ginger, you know.
I was just about to say, I'm kind of, with you, I'm on the cusp of like,
I'm like, it's not the wheelchair that makes me the weird alien. Yeah. But, you know, don't be afraid to ask questions. Like, don't be afraid to ask me about my symptoms. Also, don't be afraid about the terminology that you use. Like, I really appreciated, like, when you started off saying, I'm going to use a language that I'm comfortable using. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's been this whole thing for politically correct language and people first language. And I found it's like actually broken down conversation because people are so scared of saying the wrong thing that they just don't talk.
Don't ask. Yes.
Yeah. And it's very easy for you to realize when someone's been an a-hole. Like,
yes.
You can tell when somebody's been an a-hole. And you can tell when somebody's just been clumsy, not knowing how to ask
something. But really interested.
And I would much prefer to say, have someone come and ask me. Come and ask me if you've noticed, why is your face hanging today, Why the long face, It is also, I did have a great, when I really wanted to turn a guy down who just wouldn't accept no for an answer. He's like, oh my word, you're amazing. You have you have two different colored eyes. I'm like, yeah, I'm blind in the one. Next. but don't be scared to ask. Cause I think the more understanding there is, then the more conversation, the more understanding, and then the greater integration that there can be.
Yeah. No, definitely. I love it when children come and ask questions purely because you can see the parents or the adults with them are also so interested, but they've been trained not to ask or not to stare. And then so with my leg, when I end up taking it apart in the mall so that I can show the children how it works, inevitably there are more adults looking and asking than the child that raised it. So I'm all for raising awareness for all types of disabilities.
Do you still use the shark story?
So there are some stories that I don't use because it's way too frequent how people lose limbs. But yes, I do use the shark story quite frequently. My favorite is to tell children I lost my leg because I didn't listen to my mother and I didn't eat my vegetables.
So, you didn't lose it in the war or anything.
No, luckily not. So Natalie, if you were to meet a person, I know Kat just said she doesn't like to speak to people that was recently diagnosed, but what is the one main thing that you would like to say to a person that's newly diagnosed?
It's also on the flip side of Kat. Again, you look at me. I don't look disabled. So in a way, a newly diagnosed person will look at me and say, okay, it's not that bad. So what I have also had people, friends of friends contact me and say, listen, my friend or my aunt or whatever has just been newly diagnosed. And I leave it up, the door open there. If they want to chat, I'm happy to chat. But it's always difficult because when you're newly diagnosed, it's still a shock. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to be, I was immediately pawned off on someone that was a very progressed MS in a very dark place. And that didn't go well.
Like, oh my God, is this where I'm going?
So that for me is not that I see Kat that way, but you're not in a dark place at all. I mean, but it's just, I would say to them, as I've been saying, don't stop living your life. It's not a death sentence. It's you're not necessarily going to end up in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
It's, as we say, the snowflake disease. You just don't know. So for me, that was what I like a lot about my new neurologist. He's like, you're fine, man. There's nothing wrong with you. Just keep doing what you're doing. No special diets. I mean, okay, there's a lot of research into also autoimmune with special diets and everything, but he's of the opinion, he has very strong opinions, but he's of the opinion is, keep doing what you can do and what you want to do while you still can.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's what I would say and what I have said too. I mean, I still consider myself newly diagnosed, even though it's been, almost 8 years. But, yeah, that's what I would have liked to hear, if I can put it that way, when I was diagnosed.
And Kat, where do you go for support?
So I think, that was the thing where as I say, it's not like that I don't speak to recently diagnosed people. No, I don't like to. But I think it's so important, find your support system. Yeah. I think, really important to build a medical support team around you. You can get some really, I'm trying to think of polite words right now, neurologists or doctors who really are not pleasant to deal with, and others who get it. And I think, you want to find a good medical team who understand how you're choosing to live, and support your decision. Sometimes, you know, give you a rap over the knuckles of, I mean, for me, certainly finding a doctor who is in support of my sport and how much I exercise. Mm-hmm. And is willing not to, you know, and if I go in there saying, you know, I've got this new symptom, not just to be like, oh, yeah, I know you're pushing yourself too hard, or like, how can we support you? Like, been finding a physio who understands MS, you know, and sport. So, like, I've been so blessed, like, I found a physio who balances the two. So it's not just a sports physio, but understanding how my MS symptoms also affect my sporting injuries. Mm-hmm. So I think finding a medical support team is really a massive thing. Because I think also if you've got a good and easily available medical support team, it means you can get assistance quicker. You know, when there's damage happening, the more quickly you can act on it, you reduce the risk of it causing something permanent.
Yeah.
But I think like your support network in terms of friends who, you know, I have that group of friends where I know that I don't have to hide when I'm in a really bad place physically, who I'm happy to have around, who understand when I might just go undercover for months and months just because everything's too overwhelming. I think work colleagues as well, you know, and obviously it's not to share everything with everyone. You know, it's, I think, you know, you also do, unfortunately, some people will use stuff against you, especially in a corporate environment.
Yeah.
But having a good support system for me and other things, been finding a coach. He knows, you know, if I'm having a bad day, he recognizes it. This is not me being lazy. This is not me just not feeling like training, but he actually needs to cut down on what he's doing. Or that I am just being lazy and he needs to kick my butt into gear, not be scared of MS, to push, you know, and still push me. So, like, that for me is, like, just
not treat you like a delicate flower.
Yes. Not just be like, oh, shame. Yeah. You know, it's because there are days where also I'm like, I don't want to swim just because the water's cold and I've had a bad day. It's got absolutely nothing to do with MS. So then be a coach. Be a hard-ass coach. But there are other days where I just can't. And then you also do need to be the coach to be like, okay, no, I think we're done.
Yeah.
So I think it is. It's just finding, like, in all aspects of your life, whether it's medical, personal, professional, people who understand and get it. And know that there might not be many, but, like, value the ones who do.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So what I'm hearing is don't be afraid to ask. We love creating awareness. Have that support system. And just because you have been diagnosed, don't stop doing what you love doing.
Yeah,
sure.
Okay. Have I missed anything in closing?
Can we just be clear there? I don't like running.
who does?
I didn't like it when I could.
So that's why you opted.
Stopped early. Yes. Like I started walking late in life and then I stopped doing it early in life. Yeah. So it's overrated.
Yeah, definitely.
Way too overrated. Yeah. So is there anything that the two of you feel that I did not cover that you would like to get out there in closing?
Especially in our industry, Maria, the mining industry. it's difficult enough being a woman in the mining industry, as you very well know. So having a disability on top of that is a challenge. We're not going to lie. I mean, you get certain privileges, though. I mean, going through the airport security, not going through airport security. That's the two of us. Yeah, that was great. But yeah, as I said, in the mining industry especially, there is still a big stigma. Being out in the field was where I enjoy being the most. And there's always a bit of hesitance to, you know, let me do that. I am more office-based now, but don't have an issue with that. But I actually found myself better physically while I'm in the field, because for me, being active actually helps me.
Yes.
This is what come back to it again. This is why I run, because if I don't run, I have very bad restless legs at night. So I have to use them or yeah.
Lose them.
Yeah.
That was your problem.
Yes.
So, yeah, so for me, being active is really important to me. Yeah, there's always going to be, I mean, it's scary. You don't want to send someone into, you know, the middle of the Congo that might relapse or whatever. But this is where the education comes in, especially for me. It's not like I'm going to, you know, drop dead in the Congo. there are measures, you know.
Not from your image.
yeah. Good point. Fair enough. But no, these, and yeah, just from me in closing, it's awareness for me that is the biggest thing, because you these are the things you can manage. It's not to say you can't do them anymore. They are manageable, you know, and you have measures to deal with it. So, yeah.
Definitely.
That's from me.
Kat, anything from you?
Not really. It's just, I think, following on with that of just when in doubt, ask.
Yeah. So, if you are an HR person currently listening, or a manager considering to employ a person with a disability, here is what I can say to you. I struggled a lot to find a permanent position because I was constantly reminded that I am a health and safety risk.
I mean, you are, but not because
of... Not of my disability. It's been statistically proven that people with disabilities actually have much less workplace injuries than people that are completely able-bodied. So please stop using that line to circumvent employing people with disabilities or accommodating people with disabilities. Once again, I think all three of us can attest to this. Awareness, and awareness. If you're not sure, ask. We won't bite and we won't scream at you. Well,
maybe.
Kat will definitely bite, but...
not feral.
Yes, the little feral ginger.
Orange cat.
So, but please do ask. And on that note, if you have any questions pertaining to this specific podcast and you would like to reach out, you can find us at info@wmsa.org.za. And I would really like to take this time to thank both Natalie and Kat for offering their Saturday morning to come and discuss a very important subject with us. So thank you very much for your time and your input. It's highly appreciated.
Thanks very much.
Okay. And then I would like to also thank you for taking the time to listening to this, because time is precious. It's one of the things that we can't get back. And if you have any ideas of what you would like to hear on a diversity, equity, inclusion, and a feeling of belonging podcast, please let us know once again at info@wmsa.org.za. Have an excellent day. Thank you.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.